everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up, where we dive headfirst into the political circus with the grace of a clown on roller skates. Today, we're juggling the California education bond, a financial spectacle so wasteful, it makes the federal government look like a model of fiscal responsibility. Then we'll tightrope walking through the Democrat convention's hypocrisy. Because if there's one thing politicians love more than power, it's a good old-fashioned double standard. And hold on to your popcorn, people, because RFK Jr. has just thrown the biggest plot twist since The Usual Suspects by endorsing former President Trump. Yes, you heard that right. It's like watching your favorite sitcom where the quirky neighbor suddenly becomes the main character's best friend. So buckle up, because we're about to navigate through the political comedy of errors with more laughs than a stand-up routine at a clown convention. So let's get to it. Hello, everybody. Once again, this is William Del Pilar, and don't forget to check this show out and other shows out at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as our social media outlets, YouTube, Rumble, Pandora, Spotify, under the handle Grumblings Media. So let's welcome our guests, our regular guests here, G. Mangani and Annette Ross. Annette, please tell us a little bit about yourself for the newbies who are watching the show.
Hi, so good to be back. William, G, hello. Haven't seen you in at least a couple days. I'm Annette Ross, president of the Rancho Santa Fe School Board, at least still today, running for re-election, author of the book Where Fairy Tales Go, and disability advocate.
And G, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm also on the Rancho Santa Fe School Board and have been there since 2018, and so that's, what, 5.5 years and counting?
Wow.
And my day job, I run a software consulting business. So both things plus my family keep me very busy. And I'm here fired up.
Well, you know, and both of you serve on the school board, and that's a big politics in today's day and age right now, especially with the Democrat convention. We're not going to get into the school aspect, but the president, Randy Weingarten, was giving a speech there at the convention regarding how what she pretty much said was the school system is made for great jobs and great union jobs. I mean, that's what she was promoting first and foremost. And I always thought, I was like, wow, I thought schools were for the kids, you know? So it was a weird convention, but I wanted to talk about the convention in terms of the hypocrisy. First of all, we'll go straight into this. We'll start with you, G. G, there was extensive fencing used to secure the convention area. Now, what makes this ironic is Democrats are an open border party right now. And here they go with fencing around the convention area. Is it just me or do you see the hypocrisy with that?
Well, I just want to know if Mexico paid for it. I mean, they by doing that, just basically confirmed that walls do work, right? And they needed to keep Republicans out? No, they needed to keep their own party out of the convention, right? And the reason why is because of the Palestinian conflict, and they're anti-Israel, and probably many of them are anti-Semitic. So they've got a problem with part of their base, which is going to affect the presidential election in Michigan for sure. But, I mean, they basically said, okay, well, walls do work. We need more police. I'm guessing the police were out there. So they weren't defunded. They were actually very well funded. And, you know, that is like what you said, the hypocrisy of it all is you have a stance that you're going to go on stage and talk about, but then you're going to have a different stance when it comes to the reality of it. So I want to say it was Biden on the first night. I remember he was giving a speech, and he was talking about the riots and the people marching and protesting. And for a second there, I thought he was acknowledging what was happening right outside. But he wasn't. He was talking about Charlottesville back in 2017, 7 years ago. So there's a protest and riot going right outside, but you need to go back 7 years to talk about some debunked talking point that he has. And I don't want to get into that, but yeah, the hypocrisy is definitely there.
You know, that's a great point. Annette, before we go to you, there's a, I won't say his name, but I am going to do a clip on him. He's a well-known insider, not as big an insider in the NFL as others. But we got into it regarding that Charlottesville, and I just showed him, you know, hey, even Snopes came out and corrected that, and he didn't want to have none of that. So it's no surprise that that's something the Democrats are still hanging on to. Miss Annette, there were initial breaches by protesters, so additional layers of fencing were added to enhance security. Any thoughts similar? I assume your thoughts are probably similar to G's, but what do you think about this?
I think that G's did a good job nailing it. I don't know if any of you saw Vivek Ramaswamy was out there with the protesters. Did you guys see that? And what he said was that it got violent at times, and it was actually pretty scary. And he also grabbed a lot of the materials that they were passing about outside, which a lot of it was like, he said he wasn't going to read it all, but communist, you know, materials. I mean, it was some very strange stuff, pamphlets and so forth that he was showing. I can't disagree with the thing that G said. I think that it's completely hypocritical. It's so obvious and blatant. I guess for me, the problem that I have is, how can anyone be buying it? And how could there be so many people there and so many people talking now, I guess, super enthusiastic about this convention, and yet they're not noticing that we have somebody who is currently in office. That is, and the obvious thing is when they're saying, when I get in, I'm going to make all these changes. I'm going to be talking about the border. You have been in office and a part of the current administration that all of these same problems you think you're going to address in another 6 months, you could be addressing right now. So, yeah, I'm surprised that we have a very, very large swath of the population that this doesn't make them outraged, but instead somehow, I guess with the help of the legacy media, they're not oblivious to it, but they're overlooking it. And I guess they don't understand the impact that it's actually making.
I use this word a lot. You guys have probably figured out it's depressing. I'm right with you, Annette. It's depressing. For me, it was really being hit with a bag of bricks. There's a great scene in Bad Boys with Sean Penn and I forget the guy's name. He's a great Latin actor, where Sean Penn takes the pillowcase and fills it with Coke cans and, yes, you know, beat Sean Penn's character with it. S.I. Morales. Thank you, Mr. Producer Big John there. And it's one of my favorite scenes because of the brutality. And in 2012, that's how I felt with my brethren Latinos and Black Americans when they voted for so overwhelmingly to reelect Barack Obama. And because I'm like, did you not see the last 4 years? And I think, Annette, you're right. It's the legacy media. And but that said, as G said a couple of weeks ago, it's the economy, stupid, to paraphrase Carville, James Carville, and I think that's really getting to people. And I'm glad you brought up Vivek. I had him in my notes. I hadn't gotten a chance to bring it up, but you're right. And what Vivek, what I got out of that Vivek, the video, is how they were saying, get out, you don't belong here, you don't belong here. And Vivek reminded them, hey, this is America. I can be here. But the reality is, with safe spaces and things like that, they're moving to a dystopian mentality, through a third world dictatorship mentality. And Vivek had good reason to fear for himself out there, because, you know, I hate to say it, Democrats get violent. You know, we saw that with the BLM. You know, I was going to call you Vivek G&G. I'm not sure you remember, but when conservatives would do all their protests during the Tea Party movement, we cleaned up after ourselves. And the Democrats, they get violent and they leave a swath of not only destruction, but a trash and everything. So what's your whole thoughts on Vivek having the big cojones to go out there and talk to these people, whereas most others wouldn't? I mean, he's becoming quite a marvel of a man out there.
No, I think he attacks the establishment right at the heart of it, right? So the establishment will not go out there with the little people, right? The plebeians or the plebes for short. But Vivek has always done that. And I think that's why he got nobody knew who he was 18 months ago. Came out of nowhere. And I think it was this idea of let's not do things the way politicians normally do it. And he took a page out of Trump's playbook, right? So, and I'm sure you guys saw Trump had his first outdoor rally since the assassination attempt. Mm-hmm. And so he has this bulletproof glass all around him. Yet some, I believe it was a lady who fainted in the audience. And so he asked for doctor's help. And then he went out of the protection of the bulletproof glass to go see the lady and make sure she's okay. And again, unconventional, a man of the people. You get down there and I guess down and dirty and touch the people, right? And so, you know, you break the conventions and the norms. And I don't think any of the Democrat leaders did that at all. I can't think of one that went out there.
No, they'll never do that. And now before we move on to the second hypocrisy, because right now, G, just to let you know, Big John, our producer, you guys can't see him on camera to the audience. His head just exploded when you said Trump, a man of the people. Trump has a sordid history of destroying the little people when it came to his construction projects. I mean, that's fact. You know, that's one reason I had TDS before, like, you know. But over the last 8 years, he has become a man of the people in my eyes in how he interacts with the average Joe, how he's willing to go out there. And then what's your take on when people say Trump, a man of the people?
Well, it always comes back to my mind, this vision of him like going and buying everyone McDonald's. I can't remember what little town he was in. No, it was, and the way he related to, like you said, everyday working people in their small communities, and they felt very much, you could tell, at home with him. They were really excited for him to be there. I don't really know much about how he was and how he treated people when he was in business and not in politics. So when you said that, William, I don't think I know that history of him and how he was with his workers. I always thought, I just assumed that because of what I've seen him be the last 8 years, that he was always very relatable for sort of like our regular people. And he was trying to, he's definitely made them feel heard. That is so important. It's not like a sugar-coated. Again, when Trump first came on the scene, I remember thinking to myself, wow, he's not that polished. To me, he's not Vivek, you know, an intellect and truly the American dream. You know, like I see Vivek in a very, like, I love his story. Trump was a little bit crass, I thought, and he was able to sort of turn that crassness around. He's a little more polished now, but he still speaks his mind, and that's okay. But I think people appreciate the freshness, what they think might be a little brash, but the honesty, they interpret that as honesty at times. He's not going to be afraid or hold back and try to, like, be political at times. He's a little bit apolitical at times, in my opinion. Yeah. Like, could you try to, like, not say that? Like, if I was, I'd be like, ah. So, but for some reason, a huge huge group of people find that really refreshing, which means to me they really felt alienated and separated out from, you know, just the ivory tower, what's happening up in the upper echelon of politics and education and how that's all sort of like they're all together up there. I'm not even sure exactly what they're doing, but I have some thoughts. But and I hope I get to bring those up a little bit later, but I think that him turning to the people the way he has is really worked.
Right. I think he's a modernized version, good or bad, take it for what it's worth, of Reagan with the blue-collar Democrat. The Reagan Democrat is what they ended up calling. And you're right. Mm-hmm. Throughout the Midwest, I can't remember. In fact, she was a Secret Service agent or a media guy, covered her up at the assassination attempt, a reporter. She went out throughout the whole Midwest to cover Midwesterners, and she realized these people love Trump. And my reference to Trump is how he dealt with people who were blocking whatever he wanted built, you know, those type of but he's always treated his employees well, to my knowledge. But you're right. I think he has become a man of the people. But so getting back, though, to the Democrat convention, and we'll stay with you, Annette. Now, the Democrat Party has shifted towards defund the police movement back in 2020, including big-time support from Kamala Harris. There was a big, heavy police presence at the convention. It was kind of militant. They militarized officers, contrasting with their whole stance. Day one, there were 13 arrests for breaching. The second day, 56 arrests, 30 citations issued, a felony charge, 9 misdemeanors. I only went back to the first 2 days. There's probably more. Disorderly conduct, resisting officers, battery, assault, and 3 journalists were among those arrested, the so-called objective media. So your thoughts on that, Ms. Annette, and the hypocrisy? They don't want police anywhere else, but at their convention, they were very militant in how they were formed and presented around that convention center.
I think that should terrify everybody, for them and not for us. Talk about a police state. I mean, look at what is happening. That is exactly right. We all know what, and I'm sure we're going to talk more about this with RFK, what they're doing to free speech. That was one of his major problems. They want to be armed. They want to put out a very, very militant and very intimidating police front for them. And they're not going to allow any one of us. Well, they want to not really protect our right to bear arms, but really that's not the point for me. The point is they're militant, not because anything was threatening, but they're militant about anyone who disagrees with them or tries to get the truth. That's what's happening. That is a terrifying thing. I think we are living in a terrifying moment, and that's what we need to talk about. That's the reality of it, is that they are trying to subjugate us, to shut us up, to not have our voices out there, and they'll use military force to do it.
That is correct. And coming from a third world country, and I've studied this self-taught, you know, but we do see it through history. As countries are dictator ruled or socialism, communism, and the country begins to fall apart, we in the U.S. just don't realize the importance of that plebe, as you said earlier, having a job with the military or the police, meaning they're still collecting the check. So we in the States go, well, you know, the military should just turn on them. Well, the military is grateful to have a job, those guys there, or else they would be starving on the streets. So it's a tough situation. And you're right. They use the military in a militant fashion against us here. And it's kind of scary. And it's not just Democrats, but just in general when the government, because there have been times where I may have agreed with the ideology at that moment, but you go, whoa, dude, you're going too far there. You know, you don't need to beat the hell out of that poor civilian, you know. So, G, your thoughts on this?
No, I have a slightly different take. I mean, yeah, maybe the police was heavy-handed, but just the fact that they're using the police and using it on their own people is just laughable to me. And, you know, meanwhile, here in California, and I brought this up in previous shows, they just allow you, if you steal anything under $1,000 from a store, it's just a misdemeanor. And most likely the police won't even come out, right? So they're more concerned about protecting their ivory tower at the DNC than protecting small business owners and you know, store goers who are in the shop when these stores are broken into. But not only that, like if you might have seen Chris Cuomo of News Nation, which I think is an arm of ABC, is that correct? News Nation?
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe
it just seemed to come out of nowhere to me. But he was on the floor and he did this, and I saw it on X, but it was maybe a 3-minute clip. But he was bemoaning the fact that the Democratic Party used to be the party of the middle class, and they wanted the big money out of politics. Meanwhile, he's pointing up at the boxes up there saying, that box cost some millions of dollars, and that one cost that many millions of dollars. And it's just for people to sit and watch the DNC, right? And not only just regular people, but also like the news stations or maybe some of the wealthy. So while they're bemoaning, and this is what Chris Cuomo was saying, they're bemoaning the wealthy, wealthy, rich white men, maybe they'll, you know, narrow in on them. They'll happily take their money.
Yep.
Right. And then that's That's the ring of police surrounding all the wealthy people. But then the little people, well, let's defund those police, right? So there's hypocrisy there.
Right, right. In fact, before we move on to voter ID, what I tell people is you always see a change once crime hits the elite section. So in San Francisco, people, this went over the radar of everybody. Gavin Newsom started making comments when they started to rob those high-end jewelry stores in San Francisco. Then Gavin Newsom started coming out with a few comments. London Bree, I think is her name, came out with a few comments because they were entering the elite zone. So that's very true, very true. All right, let's get over to voter ID policy. So historical Democratic support for voter registration through driver's licenses, meaning you register to vote just by going to DMV and things of that nature. So, well, I really don't know why I said that. I guess what I'm getting ahead of myself. But the point being is they don't want voter ID for anybody come election day. And that hit me two cycles ago when for the first time, you know, I went to go vote and it just was awkward. I didn't have to show my ID. Yet to get into the convention, Ms. Annette, you had to show ID. Steve Cortez, I think is his name, had a phenomenal, it was just too long, but a phenomenal like 3, almost 4 minute video. He had an illegal with him and he was trying to get that illegal access into the convention. And he was saying, no, we're just asking because, you know, Democrats, you know, hey, my friend came over here with no ID, was able to cross the border. He's here right now. He just wants to go sit here and thank his friends at the convention. And you know, they realized eventually that he was mocking them, some of the people. But what are your thoughts on this form of hypocrisy?
It's embarrassing, honestly. It's embarrassing. I have no words for some of this stuff because it's that outrageous. And, you know, what is that saying when something is so outrageous and blatant and it's just completely in your face? They're not even, like, trying to, like, cover their sins. Like, no offense. They don't really care. So it's rules for thee, but not for me. And I don't even know why this, to me, again, why in the world you have to show your license, your ID to get on a plane. You've got to use it for all kinds of manners of things. I can't even think of them all off the top of my head, and not to vote for the president of our United States. I mean, you should have to prove that you are who you say you are for that occasion. It's worthy of that, you know, and again, it's for their protection, for them to feel secure. That's all okay. But they know exactly what they're doing. This is the game plan to let as many people vote who really might not be legally able to vote, to put their votes in any way, to let them cast their votes and be counted. And I just think that now where this stuff is more and more exposed, and for those of us that we can still have this podcast and have this voice, we have to bring it out, talk about it. I don't believe that most people who live in this republic think that these things are okay. And I guess we have to keep on putting it out there so people get the idea and they see the harm that it does to them. I think that's part of the problem, William. That's part of the problem is people don't see the harm. They do see the hypocrisy, but they're willing to somehow just be like, ah, it's okay. No. It's harming our it's harming our republic. We are a republic.
Right. And I remember now, I was bringing up the driver's license because that automatically registers them to vote. So when they do go vote without having to show any ID, that vote has a good chance of being counted. There's so many red flags. The Star Spangled, there was a Jimmy Carter had some kind of committee that studied this, and voter ID was one of the most important things there. You need a special ID to get past the perimeter, and then you need additional credentials, which is pretty standard, like VIP or whatever, to gain access elsewhere. I assume you probably align with Senorita Annette there in your thought process.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's fair to have ID. We need to know who's coming into a building or – recently we instituted parent IDs at our school just to have more security around it, right? So if you don't have an ID, you're not going to be allowed on campus without some amount of vetting, right? And because the safety of our children's at stake. So it's paramount. I think you need ID wherever you go, and, you know, don't be caught driving without a driver's license. And It's funny that you bring that up. When I renewed my driver's license, I think it was 2021 or 2020, right after I was done, the computer asked if I wanted to register to vote. It caught me by surprise because it didn't ask me whether I was a citizen of the United States or whatnot. Maybe they already know, right? But just to me, it just seems so insecure that I could just all of a sudden register to vote. And maybe if they knew I was not a citizen, maybe I have a different set of questions. So I don't know. But what I find interesting is that in Arizona, now they're going to require you to present proof of citizenship to register to vote, which is great. Some people are calling that racist, but it's not racist. If everyone's required to show that, I think that's great. So whether you're white, brown, black, blue, yellow, whatever color you are, if you're required to show citizenship proof before you can register to vote, that's what we need to do. And it becomes racist right. when you say, well, that group needs to show up, but not that group. That's when it becomes racist. The last point I want to say about just voter ID, and I know I'm not talking the hypocrisy necessarily, but I look at places like Ohio and Florida, and they're turning more and more red, right? Deeper and deeper red. I think Ohio is like 10 to 11 points red margin, right? Whereas during the George Bush W. Bush days, I think it was like 3 to 4%. And I know at least in Florida, I believe they cleaned up a lot of their registered voters, right? So a lot of them were probably dead voters and they get their ballots in the mail and the neighbor goes, oh, great, I get three more votes. So I think that's part of it, right? You clean up the voter rolls and then you have to show up in person to vote. And that way you don't hand over 200 ballots. Right. So,
right.
Yeah. So I think that's important.
Right. Right. It's we call it a chain of custody in the military and in the police and all that. And that used to be really important when voting. But with mail-in ballots, with ballot harvesting, with registering the vote without asking or without not asking but showing proof that you're a citizen, this is to me again. Maybe I'm jaded by being brought up in a country with two dictators, but I'm like, this is all for one reason. It's not to make it easier to go for us to go vote, but it's to create voter fraud. And voter fraud is already there. It's statistically that's a given, you know. So I don't want to. So we covered the three big points that I wanted to cover. But real quick, to answer your question, G, WGN America, the big Chicago superstation, that used to be called WGN America Network. That turned into News Nation. I would say it slants left. I'm not going to say it's leftist, but slants progressive because you got Dan Abrams is a big time leftist. He owns Media Matters. His daddy was in politics. He's a Silver Spoon accredited. Then you have obviously Chris Cuomo, Ashley Banfield. They skew hard. Cuomo not so much, but he used to skew hard left, and Ashley Banfield skews left. So and it's owned by Nexstar. I'm giving you guys probably the audience like, oh, who cares? Let me find this flood. Nexstar now owns the CW. They just bought the CW a year or two ago. I did not know that until I looked at it real quick. But it's a little inside baseball there for the media information there for you guys out there. But so let's move on, though. Let's move on to California Prop 2, which is the education prop. Oh, let me bring up my notes. You know, one day I'll get this better. In terms of my notes here. Here we go. California's Proposition 2. $10 billion for schools because who needs solutions when you can just tax your way to the bottom? And what I mean by that is it doesn't matter how much money we put into our school systems. When your job is to indoctrinate and not teach how to critically think and don't get people school choice, I don't have much hope for our education. And I'm mostly referring to the working class districts and things like that. And we'll get into that in a moment. But real quick, it's on the ballot, a proposition. It's a bond issue, which means it's borrowing money to pay it back later. It's $10 billion in general obligation bonds. $8.5 billion is going to go through K through 12 facilities. $1.5 billion will go for community college facilities. And just a real side note on that, in the 1990s, California's community college system was seen as the standard bearer, not only for the nation, but for the world, for people who couldn't afford the four-year college, but you were getting just as good an education with a two-year community. The fiscal impact, obviously $10 billion. It could be up to $25 billion after principal and interest. It's about $500 million annual repayment, but that's not a given. You know, and it's a repayment period of over 30 to 35 years. At the end of the day, people, it's just more taxes on us to pay back later, in my opinion. You two, this doesn't direct you directly as individuals, but in terms of your job responsibility, being on school board, I'm sure you're aware of this. We'll start with G. G, your initial thoughts on this.
Yeah, I view it as redistribution, right? So local control, you get the money from your local area to do what you need to do with your school. So there are a lot of areas that don't have that kind of money. So they're going to take from everyone in the state, which means the richer areas are going to pay more so they can send it to the poorer areas. And I think a part of it is the financial mismanagement at the state level. I mean, we've been getting so much money for ELOP, which is extended learning opportunities, right, before or after school. We just got some money for our art program or music program. I mean, and these are great things, but, you know, why don't they give some money for helping to rebuild the facilities? So I think if they manage the state money better, that they could do that. I think part of it is also prevailing wage, right? So whenever we have a construction project, we have to pay prevailing wage. And I looked it up earlier just to make sure I could get my numbers right. But just for like carpentry, right, if you want to build a building, it's $75 an hour, which is basically, you know, full time is $150,000. There's no competitive bidding. The contractors have to pay their employees $75 an hour, right? And I don't believe that salary completely is for all these line items, right? Healthcare and pension and all that. But if they allowed more competitive bidding, then you could fund a lot more projects with the same number of dollars. But in this state, we can't do that.
Right, that's correct. In San Diego County, I think they passed it a couple years ago, at least for the city, that you can only get union labor. You cannot, which destroys a whole swath of working class individuals, specifically a lot of Latinos who aren't part of the union. They can't even, they have no chance. So that's true. Miss Annette, the support for this program is Newsom, the Teachers Association, the state PTA, school districts, construction groups, because as G said, they get the money. It's very progressive, the support for this. Piggybacking on what G said, what are your thoughts initially in all this?
Well, that none of their money is free. And a lot of times what I feel like they do when they give money is create a complex structure where we have to be accountable to them. And I think I saw in there something about facilities. And if you get money, and then you're going to have to be telling them this five-year plan for facilities and how. So a lot of times what they do is give money and then say, this is how you have to be accountable to us for the money that we gave you. No, thank you. Actually, other thing that, I didn't want to interrupt you when you said it, but you mentioned ELOP, but in the massive amounts of money we got for COVID. At that time, we actually still have money left over from COVID, William, that has just sort of been sitting there, extra money that floated down or went to all the districts, I think. And some, where did it come from? I guess, I don't know where it came from.
Taxpayers.
Well, it always does come, it's always breaking our backs. I'm sorry. I know it came from the taxpayers. I should not have said that. But all of a sudden, there was this influx of cash. Well, right, because it came from the government, and then it really came from the taxpayers. Isn't that the way it always works? It's just whatever. So, but back to the point that I was saying before is that they give us money, but then they actually tell us how to spend it. So they'll say, oh, we want to give you money for music, but not so you can be innovative or you can be like maybe make a brand new music program. What they say is, we'll give you money for music. You've got to hire this many new teachers. Oh, that sounds like it's more for, is that really to beef up our music program or make sure that we can all have brand new instruments or new orchestra, things to put your sheet music on? No, it's about the control. It's about the accountability. And when they give us money, it is never free.
Correct, correct. It's your catch 22. Oh, no, you can be is autonomous. Is that the right word? You can be an individual school board. You can make your own decisions as long as you follow our guidelines, you know. And you guys may be too young, but I was at that cusp of 18 to 21. Hey, I can have my first beer legally, you know. And what people don't realize is the government said, no, states, you have the right. You can keep the drinking age at 18, but you're not going to get the highway funds, you know. So it's a form of blackmail. What you were talking about, Annette, school districts must submit a 5-year school facilities master plan to participate in that program. Districts must also submit a report of their existing school building capacity. Some districts have to also match the funds. And so I'm against this because we've squandered with too many programs and don't, our kids should be our first and foremost priority. Instead, we make them no priority, and then they try to put the guilt trip on the public. Well, you got to pass the bonds for the kids, you know? So that's why I'm against this. But if everything was equal, I would strongly consider this because I do like the fact that the wealthier districts, your district, for example, it's not good or bad, but you know, let's say they want to fix this or this. You have the income tax, you have the high income tax earners where you can match this with fundraisers or another bond on the local, but not a national city. And for people out there, national cities are Latino version of Compton in some ways, you know. They're not going to be able to raise any funds. So they got a good program here where they have carve-outs for that. But the problem is you just can't trust them. It's like, I want to say it's probably 15, 20 years ago now. They had a bond for firemen, for, you know, everybody who voted, and they passed the bond. They thought it was going to go to fire. The fire department said, no, it went into the general fund. And by law, anything in the general fund can be used for whatever. So you just can't trust the government.
Can I say one thing? No, because what you said triggered something. Yes, and I think it's so sad. They tried to manipulate and control those other districts even more so. You're right. A district like ours that has more resources, we can sort of stand up a little bit against the state. Or we can even say no to money because it might have restrictions or it might be like there's too much that we have to give if we want to take the money. But a lot of those other districts can't do that. So they're really beholden to the state. So the state basically is like – a sculptor carving out the schools, the public schools, the way they want to see them. And so they have to behave and do what they want them to do because they really need the money. And I'll say one more thing. The teachers, some of our teachers that I know well and personally were going to get their master's degree. Again, they were able to get money from the state so long as they're the subject that they took for their teaching credential and getting their master's was SEL. Social emotional learning. They were pushing that so hard. So if the teachers wanted to get the money for their master's, which of course they do, they're better in their education. All those are really good things. They had to take. So now they're well-trained and well-versed in what I think is a form of indoctrination. Well, some of the SEL programs definitely are. Some of them are better than others for sure. But so another tricky way will give you the money. If you learn what we want you to learn, and then you teach what we want you to teach, and we're retraining your brain, the more you hear it, the more you're going to agree with it.
Right.
Yeah. They're continuing to push further things like transitional kindergarten, which is basically preschool. They want every school district to provide that for free to the community, but we don't get the money for it from the state. So now we have, with the same budget, we have to now add 40 to maybe 60 new kids, and we've pushed back against it, saying, no, we can't do that. And another example is the universal meal plan. So without consideration for what kind of community you have, and of course they're going to use the guilt trip, oh, you don't care about feeding the kids, you want the kids to go hungry. No, that's not it. The average home in our area is $3 million, right? So the kids are not starving in our area. But yet we're forced to pay for their breakfast and their lunch if they ask for it, right? And there's no consideration as, okay, well, maybe that school board decides that they don't need to do it. At least apply for some waiver. Like give us a chance to ask the state for a waiver to say, we really don't need this in our area. We don't have any of that. We have to implement it, right? So if the state was a little more responsible with their spending or their policies on us and how we can spend, then we would have more money to fund some of these projects.
That's true. That's true. You know, when you sat there and said the emotion or whatever, I think of that 1975 great song, Feelings, Nothing More Than Feelings. I can't sing for squat. But, you also said it, you know, they try to put the guilt trip. It's progressives are just great at manipulating feelings. And that's why they win a lot of these battles. You know, people don't like facts. Facts don't generate a feeling, but you know, emotion does. Before we leave this topic, I want to talk briefly on the arguments in favor and against. The arguments in favor, urgent need for repairs and upgrades, and that's true. It addresses issues like mold, leaky roofs, and outdated infrastructure. Now, the one thing, if I was for this, I'd be going AC. There's a lot of schools that really need a new AC. And it allows for construction of new classrooms, update science labs, 10% allocation for smaller school districts. It provides $1.5 billion for community college improvements. Our community colleges are now a joke. They went from being the best in the world to, I don't want to say a joke, but to becoming substandard when you compare it to what they used to be. Yeah. Now, so all those are great. The problem I have is that we should have the money for that already. But we, again, I will always bring this up. We're still wondering where the $5 billion went to China for the mask we never got during COVID. You know, where's the investigation? You know, it's we don't know. There's really only one group opposing this. That's a Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. For those of you not in California out there, they're probably our staunchest defenders in making us understand the what the state really wants to gouge us tax-wise. So they are actually a great advocate for everybody, but the Democrats have demonized them to sit there and say, to put them in a negative light. But they have financial concerns. They call it an expensive version of a credit card. Again, we're borrowing, what's that saying? We're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul down the road. So I agree with that. The interest payment significantly increased the total cost of taxpayers down the road. Equity issues, concerns about equity and fund distribution. You know, again, they do have some programs to offset that. And the other thing is, $10 billion really isn't enough. That's how bad our education system is. So they're going to come out with another bond a few years down the road again. And when I did my research, one of the articles was old, but it's still true because we do have surpluses here and there during times. It's like utilize the budget surplus when we have it for one-time expenses like school construction. And to your point earlier, repeal project labor agreements to increase competition. I see both sides of it, but because of how corrupt and how big our government has grown, I just can't trust the side that wants this. Gia, we'll start with you for your final words on this before we move on then to Annette. We've kind of beat this, I think, down, but any final words from your end?
No, I think what you said at the end there is, you know, this is a way to fund jobs, right? And that's a good thing to have jobs, except for when these jobs are overpaid and you have right. no chance of having competitive bidding. And like you said, you don't trust the other side of the ones who are in charge of the purse strings. And that's always a bad thing of one party rule. And I don't care if it's Republican, Democrat, and John's probably applauding right now in the background, but one party rule leads to corruption and it always happens. And that's why having an opposition party that's substantial is important. It's to, you know, to allow better labor agreements that are better for the people rather than better for the labor unions.
Right, right. And I'll toss this caveat on to you to add for your final comment if you want to put in. There was an Assembly Bill 75 that proposed $12 billion school facilities and a Senate Bill 22 that proposed a $15 billion, just to let you know. My take is they didn't want to add to the budget and they feel that this is a great we can guilt them into voting for it through a bond issue. Your final words and your thoughts on that before we move on.
Well,
and if you disagree, that's fine.
No, because honestly, I did have some feelings toward it because I do think there are some schools out there that have real needs, especially for the infrastructures of the schools and buildings not being, like you said, air conditioning, and some that are really probably broken down and they don't have good facilities and proper facilities for learning, and maybe even in the classrooms, not the proper, you know, furniture or, you know, whatever the students need. It doesn't just pull at my heartstrings. I mean, it should pull at my heartstrings. It pulls at everyone's heartstrings, because if everyone believed it, like you said, that's the problem, the erosion of the public trust. If people believed it was going to schools, I think we'd all be all for it. If we believed it was going to be to the betterment. And I actually think there could be some sort of idea out there where there was an actual assessment made about the districts that really could use this help. Because I think some do and some don't. You know what I mean? This is part of the problem with bigger government and a fix-all. And again, like you said, that's really not that much money. If you think about how many public schools there are in the state of California, how many just in LA that are in disrepair, that's not that much money at all. I'm not sure what they're planning on doing. And so I don't think it would go very far. I'm not sure it would make the impact they wanted to make. It just sort of sounds okay. Like, hey, we're giving money to schools, or we're giving money to students. Well, guess what? Our education is going to be better. No. I mean, you have to just think about it a little bit longer and a little bit harder, and to think about it critically to see, like, wait, that's not that much money. Are we going to really make a dent in anything? How much of it is going to really impact the students? And actually, could we look at the districts that need it the most? I mean, I think we'd be the first district to say, you know what? I mean, if the world could be this way in a perfect world, William, you know, where we'd say, we don't need it here, but... Yeah. But you go ahead and take it there. That's why the free lunch thing always bothered me, because we are in a district where most people, I just want to say overwhelmingly the majority, can feed their children. So, but people were starting to take advantage of it because it was free. And that always really bothered me. So I think we'd be the kind of district who might say, we don't need public funds for anything right now. We're doing okay over here. But I think there are schools that need it, and that's a shame if they can't make their argument to get it, and they don't have to jump through hoops and do all the things that the state's going to require them to do to get some extra funding.
Okay. No, you're right. You're right. You know, I used to, even as a kid, because my mother, I grew up in Panama, we had dirt poor relatives, cousins and things. And it just, even as a child, when I came to the state, sixth, seventh grade, seeing that kid having to use the ticket with a certain color that showed that, you know, we all knew they're poor, and how they were embarrassed. And even as a kid, that broke my heart, because I could relate to it with my relatives. So, in a perfect world, you know, Rancho Santa Fe, they wouldn't need that program. But we don't live in a perfect world, and that's how money gets wasted. And it's a caveat. And this isn't just government. See, here's my issue before we move on, I'll give my final 2 cents is corporations, government, everything is run just as an individual leads his life. It's human nature. You know, when you're given money by somebody, a friend or somebody, you go and you blow it. Like somebody borrows money, and this has happened to me. Well, what's the big deal? You can afford it when the person doesn't want to pay it back. You know, that extends to government and corporations. It's the same mentality. So to me, it's a human nature. We got to look in the mirror, and government employees and government politicians will never do that. All right, guys, let's move on to our final topic, from Camelot to Make America Great Again. RFK Jr.'s endorsement leaves Kamala brain for attention. And I guess I should say what brain is in the audience. That's a donkey Democrat. I think I got too cute with that one. But I sent you guys notes on this because, you know, he gave his interview today. But this was obviously today in Phoenix. He went and he endorsed Trump. He cited a lack of a realistic path for an electoral. He emphasized he's suspending his campaign, not terminating it. And he didn't say this part, but a lot of times these people don't end their campaign because there's legal rules in terms of how much money they can get to help them pay off their debts. And he, as I said, he endorsed Donald Trump. Let me play this video here that kind of, John, your head's going to explode, because it was Lauren Boebert that I got this video from. That's a silly woman at times. But she's a Republican congresswoman, and she put this out. And
Other on other key issues, like ending the forever war, ending the childhood disease epidemics.
Can you hear that?
Securing the border. Protecting freedom of speech, unraveling the corporate capture of our regulatory agencies, getting the U.S. intelligence agencies out of the business of propagandizing and censoring and surveilling Americans, and interfering with our elections.
So I think what's happened here, and maybe with Trump with his assassination attempt, but something's happened with RFK over the last couple of years. I've never cared for him. Hardcore leftist suing everybody, even when he was in the wrong. He was like a machine. Your typical hardcore leftist candidate. But something's changed in him. Maybe because he's older. I do know as we age, I don't want to say we change as much as we look at things from a different perspective. So the first thing Kennedy did when he took the stage was declare the Democrat Party now represents the exact opposite of democracy. And his proof was he detailed how the party, so I don't know if you guys heard it. It was a long-winded speech, but very detailed. If you're a political junkie, you're like, holy mackerel, he is hammering the Democrat Party here. But he talks about how the Democrat Party subverted democracy under the guise of saving it. At the voting booth, the DNC waged continual legal warfare against Trump and himself, he said, a quote, it ran a sham primary that was rigged to prevent any serious challenge of President Biden. That's why he went independent. And look, Kamala did not get one vote, and she was coronated. Then he quotes, then when a predictably bungled debate performance precipitated the palace coup against President Biden, the same shadowy DNC operatives appointed his successor also without an election. And to the audience, what he's referring to is word on the street. You know, insiders were stating that, in essence, they threatened him. You either step out, or the 25th Amendment will start looking your way. And he felt forced to step out. So your initial thoughts on what I said before we get to the actual endorsement. Do you think there's truth, or do you think he took it to another level in exaggeration in terms of how the Democrat Party subverted the primary, how they got Biden out, and how they kept him from being a serious challenger in the Democrat Party? We'll start with you, Annette.
I'm so glad you started with me, because I love this guy. The first time I saw him, William, was like, I listened to his interview. I knew who he was, of course. But he was on Joe Rogan, and he was already put his name into run. 3 hours. I watched it twice. I found him to be riveting. And I think it is so interesting. What would be the word? I don't know if it's metaphor, but that someone who is by far and away the most articulate candidate in this race is the one who doesn't have a good voice. You know what I'm saying? He cannot physically get his voice. I almost feel if he had his voice, he could single-handedly like shut those two down. Like, I mean, I hope I'm allowed to say this on the Fired Up show, because I know you guys want me to be honest, but this man had my vote. I love
him. That's fine.
Well, I mean, the things that he said about how they have weaponized our justice system and what they did, what they are doing, that is happening in the United States of America, and why can't everybody hear it? This is sort of like about the military, and I know you said, I think you said, like, or maybe it was you, William, we use it, maybe Republican, the government can use it, but I think his description of what happened and the steps they took to keep him off the ballot should be illegal. He even brought up, I'm pretty sure, in his long speech, which I thought was excellent and riveting, again, amazing, brought up Ross Perot and how few times he was allowed to be on ABC or NBC. Twice. You know what I'm saying? So, yes, other people did give him platforms. So you had to go looking for it. I would go look for it. I wanted to hear what he had to say. I'm not saying everything he said was perfect. I'm not sure if there's a perfect candidate out there, but I think he is the brightest, has the deepest understanding. He has a lot of really interesting things to say about where the Democratic Party was and its journey to where it is today. It's troubling stuff. I mean, and he isn't. Go ahead. So I'm sorry, G.
No, that's right. G, let me add this to it. he stated that he will not be withdrawing his name from certain states, but will be withdrawing his name from 10 battleground states. And for the audience, real quick, one of the biggest issues people had with RFK Jr. is his stance on vaccines. Big John's a microbiologist, so we had a lot of conversations, so I don't have much to say on that because I'm not knowledgeable. But what I am knowledgeable is on logic. And I'm like, when you shove 72 vaccines in a kid's arm at once, there's a lot of potential for danger. So my take isn't that this causes that. My take is 72 vaccine, no, that's just, you're shoving the body with 72 versions of poison. So, but that, my point to the audience is that was the biggest issue most people had about him and his reputation. So, but back to his speech there. He said he would not be withdrawing from some of the states, but will be withdrawing from battleground states. He wants to be a spoiler to hurt Kamala, but not Trump. And that shows how much he now loathes the party. And I don't blame him simply for the fact that they kept it. Even Big John and I agreed on this. So answer this question, too. I think had he been allowed to run in the Democrat primary, he would have run away with the nomination. So your take on him withdrawing from certain states, the battleground states, and not other states, and do you think he would have won the Democrat primary?
Yeah, I mean, I think in politics, you got to balance principle and power, right? So if you – and I think RFK is the perfect example of someone who runs on principle, right? But – your principles get you nowhere if you have no power. You need to have power. So I think there's a reality of, okay, well, if you're going to – and you look at what happened with both primaries, right, Biden and Trump. None of them – neither one debated, right? But the difference is Biden and his machine kept every other competitor out of the primary, whereas Trump and the Republican side – they had a full primary. I mean, how many debates did they have? 10 to 15 of them? I mean, there were quite a few. Trump didn't attend them, but he didn't need to attend them.
Right.
So there's a difference between allowing the free exchange of ideas and knowing that yours is going to win anyways versus Biden, who said, okay, we're not going to have this exchange of free ideas. I'm the nominee. I'm going to be the nominee, and we're not going to let this guy in. So I think RFK looked at that and said, this machine needs to be broken up. And he talked about that today, right? The corrupt DNC stifling all debate. So at some point, I think RFK needs to look at this and go, okay, if I want to have implement any of my principles, which includes the vaccine mandates of COVID, and I think he's going to go further than I'm comfortable with in terms of mandating childhood vaccines, but look, like he'll get a little bit of power, and he could implement whatever he wants to implement if he joins the winning team. And I think the calculation was that Trump's going to win.
Right.
And I know he reached out to Kamala as well, but I think she completely snubbed him, said, I don't want to talk to you or whatnot. And I did see, and I know we're going to get into it a little bit here, but what was the last question you had?
Do you think he would have won the Democrat primary? But hold on, before you go to there with the vaccine, we have our fellow John Galston here, who obviously disagrees with Miss Annette. RFK Jr. is nothing more than a grifter who tapped into public ignorance about how vaccines work. Let me give the first response. John, you're probably right to a degree, you know, but again, 72 vaccines, and one of them is to prevent chlamydia or something to that effect. One of those, I don't have my notes in front of me, but I was reading up on that. And my question is, these big pharma, every vaccine that a child takes, big pharma is excluded from any lawsuits or anything if things go south with it. So the system does need to be revamped, but I'll be the first to say I'm not a microbiologist. I'm not a doc. So I have to go by what's out there. My issue is just 72 vaccines that need to be questioned. But Ms. Annette, and then we'll go to G real quick. He says he's nothing more than a grifter that tapped into public ignorance. True or not? Then he also Big John, or I was going to call him Big John, but it's John Galston here. He says, follow the money to his law firm from all the crazy lawsuits. As a RFK supporter, Ms. Annette, feel free to bash John in, but not too hard. We don't want to lose a weekly viewer here.
No, John, I don't want to lose you. I want to know if you read his book. He does go into, he wasn't saying that people shouldn't be vaccinated. I don't think he was against all vaccinations. My understanding from reading the book is one of the things is what you said, William, that those big pharmaceutical companies are unable to have, you know, if there's complications, people are not allowed, you know, to sue them if there are problems with the vaccines. And there are problems. There are documented problems. People making those, having the autonomy to make those choices for their children and the extensive, some of the studies, this, he goes into great detail about a lot of these studies with these different vaccines. And he really criticizes the way some of these double-blind studies have been done and the efficacy of some of these vaccines. So I'm also not a biologist. However, when I was reading it and it went into such detail, I thought to myself, it felt very believable to me what he was describing, and I found it to be very concerning that some of these studies were not how they were portrayed. I think there have been people that have been harmed by vaccines, but that doesn't mean that I think the overall good that they do is not greater than the harm that they do, especially for some of them, like, you know, the polio vaccine eradicated.
Measles, chickenpox, those types of vaccines.
And I want to say this, John, all of my girls are vaccinated. However, they chose not to get the COVID vaccine. And I let them make the choice. I have 5 daughters. Some of them are a little bit older. They can make that choice. I think that what you said also, William, is very true. And if we compare ourselves to other countries that don't give our children as many vaccinations, you have to, it just begets the question, why? Why? What is the purpose for what? You tell me the purpose, because I've had 5 children. Why they need to vaccinate my brand newborn baby with a hepatitis B vaccine before she even leaves the hospital? Brand new, perfect systems. I never allowed that to happen. I knew that was about, I don't even know what that was about, but it certainly wasn't about the health and well-being of my child.
Well, sorry to interrupt, but I think a better example is the greed of big pharma. And again, I don't know enough about vaccines, but 72 vaccines when I was a child, we weren't being given that many. And when you went overseas military, you had no choice. You had to take all those vaccines. But the fact that big pharma wanted to get the COVID vaccine into that, make it 73 for all the wrong reasons, that to me, see, there are red flags. See, Big John and I, not John Dawson here, but Big John and I, we've had these discussions. And my take is, I just want to do what's right. You know, so do we need 72 vaccines? Is it possible that some of these issues, I believe a lot of it's diet, the processed foods, but, you know, these vaccines aren't helping. It's like some of them we don't need, you know, to be giving kids. So that's how I look at it, John Dawson there. Gee, just quick, a few words on that so we can keep moving here.
No, I mean, I was against mandating the COVID vaccine for sure. I mean, that's like mandating the flu vaccine. But I'm in favor of a lot of these other childhood vaccines. And, you know, I got people on my side of the aisle coming at me as a school board member saying, how dare you mandate the measles vaccine? Well, look, like, I'm not mandating it. And that's the government, right? That's the state government. So we have to comply with the law. But beyond that, I'm in favor of that because measles is or smallpox or some of these other childhood diseases, ones that affect children, they are critical to maintaining public safety, right? So, So RFK, I mean, again, I don't know if he's against all vaccines or just some of them or whatnot, but, you know, some of these positions can get really extreme. So,
you're right.
Push back against that.
You're right. Like measles, polio. There's some vaccines that a vaccine is supposed to not cure you, but prevent you from catching the virus. And they actually work. But we've convoluted and destroyed that term. And I believe, again, going back to public education, our lack of being able to critically think. See, I think my answer is because I critically think about it. You know, I look, okay, this is good. That's good. But why so many? Or maybe we should spread them out or whatever. You know, we need to sit down and because this is for the kids, our future. You know, so that's how I view it. So moving back to the Kennedy, though. So Kennedy did reveal that Trump has asked him to join his administration. And the question becomes, what would Kennedy do under a Trump administration? And he would be tasked with ending the chronic disease epidemic. Now, people think vaccines with that, with Kennedy. I don't. I've done a lot of research of my own, a lot of self-help reading, and it really boils down to me is all this processed food. You know, video games, babysitting our kids. We don't go out, things like that. But that said, how would you want to see Kennedy in a Trump administration? And where do you think he would fit best? G, we'll start with you before we go to Annette.
Well, I believe Trump said a committee of presidential assassinations. And he didn't specifically say RFK would be involved with that, but I think that would be the first spot that I would put him. But I would put him in charge of, that's a good one. I would say put him in charge of the, every single thing I think of, that would not be good.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know, that's fine too. I mean, some people have said the CIA because of his family history. You know, me, I think that the rumor is the Health and Human Service or Agency, whatever that was called. That to me would be a good spot. But yeah, I can see him with the CIA, but at the end of the day, that's just wishful thinking because he doesn't have the experience on that side. Ms. Annette, your thoughts? I'm sorry, G, I cut G off. I'm sorry, G. Did you have something else to say?
No, I was going to say that I think the CIA one would be great because I know his dad and his uncle, JFK and RFK, uncle and his dad, they were at odds with the CIA during their time in the government. So that would be perfect to shake things up there because or the FBI. I mean, I just don't trust the FBI anymore.
The Attorney General will be better.
What about the Attorney General? That's what I was
saying. I'm sorry. No. All right, let's cut that in.
Right? I think that could be it.
Yeah, because the Attorney General encompasses the Department of Justice.
Yes.
And he could clean house with clean the FBI's house there. And you know what? It's not unheard of that people have changed positions from this position to that position. Usually it's in the second term, but that's not unheard of. So with that said, what is the media's downplaying this? Final question. I'll give you guys the final word on this. The media's downplaying this, Annette, but where do you think public perception is going with this? Unification of an independent and an outsider because Trump is still not well loved by the party, his own party.
Wait, Trump is not loved by
the people who lead his party. You know, the rhinos in the party, the power players, a lot of the donors. They still don't care for Trump.
They were more for Nikki, right?
Right. Right, right, no. Right. They're more for Nikki to keep the war going in Ukraine, mm-hmm. etc. But I guess I'm going a little bit out of the lib. That's the party, and the media is downplaying it. But what do you think the public perception of this unity is going to be?
Wow, that's a fascinating question. Just really quick, because you said that about – I loved what he said about the war in Ukraine, just as an aside. What is the public's perception? Oh, I don't know. What do you think?
This goes back to what I was saying last week. Mm-hmm. And by the way, my background changed and now my browser works fine. All you guys are frozen in time like 3 minutes ago.
Your hands were like
I'm like, something's different from the first week where everything was working fine, but now I realize the background.
You were like Aladdin with the hand going in and out.
So going back to what I was saying last week, the Republican Party is more centrist than it's been, I think, since the Ronald Reagan days, if not before that. Whereas the Democrat Party is like really left wing. I mean, I hear Trump say things where I go, ooh, I don't necessarily agree with that. Like throwing tariffs. I mean, I'm all for free trade, not tariffs, right? But I am for retaliatory tariffs. If China slaps on 10%, then you need to fight back and not just roll over and take it. So And I give that as an example where I go, exploded. I don't agree with that, but I do agree with that aspect of it. So going back to, okay, well, I think the Republican Party now is the most centrist that I've seen it. And I think that's going to, and it's odd to see RFK join the Republicans, right? But that's because it's more centrist than it's ever been. And whereas the Democrats are just way over to the left and unpalatable to the Rust Belt, which I think will, two of those states will go Trump's way, if not all three. So I heard a statistic today, and I think it was Dr. Steve Turley who said, okay, if RFK jumps out of the race, out of the RFK voters, which way will they vote? And 4 out of 10 said they would vote Trump's way. And I believe it was 3 out of 10 said they would go Kamala's way. So that's almost 50-50, right? With, or 40-40 with a 20% undecided. But if RFK endorsed Trump, then he would get 6 out of 10 RFK voters. So now you've really switched the dynamics. And that's what the show of unity there was. I think Trump knew that and said, what do you want, RFK? You want to implement your principles. What power do you want to implement those principles, right? And that's where RFK went over, because he granted him an audience where Kamala said, I don't want to talk to you at all.
Right.
I think the show of unity is going to be huge. I've already seen on X RFK voters, RFK supporters, like strong supporters, saying, okay, we're Team Trump now.
Right.
And they just,
right.
It's hashtag Trump2024.
I'll push back on Mr. Steve there, only from the perspective a couple of analysts said, you know, most of the Democrats left RFK already. So these are mostly voters who would have hurt Trump. So he's going to get – he didn't give a percentage. But I found that logic, because it seemed as if that shift happened over the past year, where he became more libertarian, more the Mises caucus was wooing him, which tends to align more with the Republican. So he seemed to have been taking more and more not conservative, but Republican style, or that mentality type vote. So that's what I would push back on them. Real quick, the reason I asked that question is, let me preface this poll or these numbers with this. 2 weeks ago, and I can't remember it, I apologize to the audience, I didn't think about this, but there was a poll. I always tell people, when you look at the polls, look at the methodology. Specifically, look at the plus-minus ratio of the individuals and what party they align with. So a couple weeks ago, in one of the polls, Kamala had a 2-point lead. It was a +6 Democrat poll, meaning there were that +6 more Democrats that were being polled than Republicans. A week later, because these polls are now rolling polls done every week, Kamala still had the 2-point lead, but it was a +10 Democrat poll. So these numbers taken with a grain of salt, because it's just blatantly now, the media and even these polling agencies, there's only like one or two you can really trust. But this endorsement of RFK, theoretically, will move the change. Look at that, 44, 45%, 45, 43. So it will move the change. I think this was very good for Team Trump. My partner, Big John, talks about how close it was in terms of his loss and votes, and how important the libertarian vote is. I think this will solidify that aspect of not just libertarian, but the moderate vote, the ones who may not have voted for him, even if RK had dropped out, but with the endorsement. I'll give UG the final word, and then to Miss Annette before we close the show out. Any final words on this endorsement and your thoughts on it?
Yeah, this is huge. I think it's earth-shattering, and I think the biggest thing that this has done is the morning started off, at least for a couple hours, of how great Kamala, she gave a great speech, and she came out strong against the border, and on day one, she's going to make the economy better, as if she's not been in power at all. And so there was this little bit of a honeymoon this morning, and it was totally taken away by RFK coming out. I think it was around 11 o'clock. And all the news stations shifted to him until, I guess, they determined he was talking too long, and then they came off. So I only saw the first 10-15 minutes of his speech, and then I guess I was too lazy to go on YouTube to find the live stream of it. But No, this is earth-shattering. I think it's going to affect the race big time, and I think the Democrats are panicking over it.
Yeah, and that final words are real quick. I think this race isn't even close. It was done in a fair manner, you know, with the media being objective or unbiased, et cetera, et cetera. But I think I agree with G. This is monumental in those few votes that can shift it. The final word on this to you, Ms. Annette.
That's nice of you, William. Thank you. I really think RFK doing this and the real reason in my heart after listening to his speech why he's doing it, I know he gave a few reasons, was, though, the fear and the concern he has over censorship and the Democratic Party. And that's how they're controlling things and not giving a platform and allowing us to have our First Amendment free speech rights. So I do think I agree with both of you that it's a game changer. So I'm sorry, when you said what do I think people's perception was, I was thinking like I don't know. I mean, I know how Republicans might be viewing it. I'm not sure how Democrats are viewing it. Maybe with fear, and now they've got something to be more worried about coming off the heels of last night's, you know, like G said this morning, that's all they were talking about. But she's got no real substance about her, and in my opinion, no real quality of authenticity about her. So to me, that was all like, you know, like a gaudy kind of bells and whistles kind of thing. And you've got RFK, who I think has a person, I don't know, I know your friend John thinks he's a grifter, but I tend to find him to be believable, and I tend to find him to be very authentic. And what he's doing right now by aligning with Trump, I think is going to be extremely helpful and hopefully the game changer.
I agree. Real quick on Kamala, it's funny. Somebody posted on Twitter or X this morning, you know, we have an employee up for promotion. You know, this employee's done nothing that they promised us they would, but they're up for a promotion, and now they're telling us if they get promoted, they'll do everything they said they were going to do the first time around. What should I do? So I went and answered, well, if you didn't, you know, if you didn't document anything, and then it hit me. They're talking about Kamala. And I'm like, I see what you did there, you know. But to G, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then Ms. Annette, where people can find you.
Yeah. So I signed on to X and Truth Social as RSFG. I'm a lurker, so I'm not a tweeter. Maybe that will change, but right now I just read a lot, and that's where I get my unfiltered news, but it's not really unfiltered. It is subject to the abuse by both sides to push out their viewpoint, propaganda, or whatever you want to say. But at least I can get it straight from the source right there, X.
There you go, at RSFJEE. Right. Miss Annette.
Yes. Oh, there you go. There I am. I need to start to use social media. I'm sort of like, I spent yesterday almost 8 hours in a library, William, reading a book about conquering. So I think that I love to read. I have like a very curious mind, and I don't spend as much of my time on social media as maybe I should. Maybe that's why I didn't give a good analysis about people's perspectives. But I think right now we're in a very fascinating and important period of history, and these conversations are going to be the thing, I think, that's going to help us try to move things forward a little bit. I'm going to take the incremental steps, anything we can get.
Right. We take what we can get. And to everybody else, once again, you can find this podcast and previous podcasts, as well as our libertarian podcast, our sports podcast, and our other political podcasts at Grumblings Media, as well as our social media platforms that we are on: YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Pandora, and Apple under the profile handle Grumblings Media. I thank my guests again, and until next time, this is William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up, and I bid you adieu.